Okay, so I don't waste any more time on the housekeeping things. I'd like to introduce Mary Ellen Wright. She's a PhD candidate from Florida Atlantic University and researcher for women's and children's health at Mission Hospital. Mary Ellen?
Thank you, Tammy. This is a wonderful opportunity and a great honor to be with you all today. Now, I am looking out at a wintry scene here in Asheville. We are getting hit by this wonderful winter storm. And I am at home, and I get to see what my dog does during the day while I'm at work all day, and he's curled up here snoring. So I will immediately give you a disclaimer that he may wake up at any time and give his opinion during this webinar, and I'll apologize ahead of time if that occurs. It is, again, a great honor to be with all of you today and to be around a group of passionate individuals and teams that are really looking at challenges of families who are developing themselves as families, and this one being particularly of interest, infants who are exposed to substances. And at Mission, and Tammy, could we go on to the next slide? At Mission, we had participated last year in the iNICU series for Vaughn, and we, through the year, did a little deeper dive in looking at the number of infants that we treated since 2010. And in 2010, we treated 26 newborns, and last year, we had 103 newborns treated, four times the number of babies since 2010. So our increase is going along with the national standard, and these are infants we know about and were treated. We know the number is greater as far as babies that maybe didn't need treatment or weren't identified in the early period. Tammy, can we go on to the next one? The initiative at Mission Health began many years ago, and the point of this slide isn't to have you see the details of the initiative, but just to show that the years of concentration on the aim to provide consistent, comprehensive caring approaches to infants and families affected by NAS, and I would expect that this timeline would continue on. Again, initially recognizing the increase in babies that were being identified, and then trying to come up with a standardized weaning protocol for providers to follow, bringing that protocol to the region. As many of you know, Mission Health serves an 18-county region in western North Carolina with four affiliate hospitals. And then we continue our regional maternal child network with all of the hospitals in the region. So trying regionally to take a look at the challenges that these families face and the standardization of care along the continuum, this particular topic really lends itself to the current concentration on population health and really brings to the forefront the idea that healthcare for families that we deal with begins in the community, comes into the inpatient arena, and goes back out to the community. And we really have to have that broader view to address all of the complexities that this particular challenge presents to us in healthcare in order for us to best serve the families in a family-centered way. So there's a lot of work around this initiative and a lot of collaboration with community agencies as well as our inpatient teams. Can we go on to the next slide? Thank you. So that said, we had to wrap our head around the number of collaborations that we were involved. Going on about 2 years, we formed a community collaborative in the region with agencies that work with families affected by infants exposed to substances, with a particular concentration on opiate exposure. And as mentioned, we are participating in the Vermont-Oxford Network, and of course, this initiative, and the state initiative addressing NAS from the perspective of creating information for providers and toolboxes for families and increasing awareness across the state. So we had to sit down and really think about how does that all connect together? And so we're calling this our phase two of our concentration on neonatal abstinence syndrome, and kind of formulated this type of a structure where we formed a neonatal abstinence syndrome steering committee that is really kind of the clearinghouse of all of the work. The community collaborative that we formed 2 years ago has three subcommittees, a community subcommittee that really takes a look at who are the agencies involved, what's the experience of families, what resources are in the community. And in looking at that, we realized we had whole counties that had no home health services for babies who had neonatal abstinence syndrome. And mapping that was very revealing. Taking a look at how many agencies show up on a family's door post-discharge and what are their specific roles and what kind of overlap is there. Those are the type initiatives that are coming out of that community subcommittee and trying to coordinate care. The prevention subcommittee has been led by our team of physicians from our Mountain Area Health Education Consortium, MAHEC, and the residents. And one of the things that they've done is gone into the rehabilitation centers and provided family planning services for the women in the MAHEC in the Mountain Area Recovery Center rehabilitation centers. And that program is growing and continuing to expand. It also allows post-discharge an opportunity to touch base with these mothers who are in rehab centers and their infants in a location that they would be going to anyway. So that's an incredible program that grew out of that prevention subcommittee. The third subcommittee is the inpatient NAS team, and I'm going to present a little bit more specifics on that. And all of these have representation on our NAS steering committee, so that the team that's working with PICNIC reports to the NAS steering committee, the iNICU team reports to the NAS steering committee, and then we've formed a number of subcommittees to look at issues in identification, evaluation, treatment, and discharge, so that we have a number of initiatives going on, and this helped us kind of take a look at our phase two. Tammy, can I go on to the next slide? We know that standardization improves care, and in a retrospective cohort comparison pre- and post-implementation study, by Murphy and all in 2010, they concluded at the end of their study that they were able to decrease Finnegan scores and decrease length of stay by implementing a clinical practice guideline. So we're driven to have that type of standardization. And PICNIC has given us a great format to really kind of take this complexity and organize our thinking in these four categories. And that was such a great way for us to wrap our head around the complexity and how can we address this. Tammy, the next slide, please. One example of the way that we approached it last year in our iNICU series was to do a process mapping inpatient. And we also did a process mapping in the community. The point of this slide, again, is not to show you detail of our processes, but really to just show the broad view of mapping and how complex even just looking at the potential patient and family experience coming in and out for labor and delivery and the different units that may have families affected by neonatal abstinence syndrome, and are we standardizing within our own center the type of education that we're doing, the way that we're doing Finnegan, the way that we're doing discharge planning, the way that we're doing treatment. So that was very telling, and we were able to map areas of needing continued opportunities for improvement and areas that we felt that we had good standardization. Tammy, can we go on to the next one? Thank you. All areas had opportunities for improvement. So we began to form subcommittees to address those opportunities in the areas of identification, evaluation, treatment, and discharge. And again, like I said, the steering committee is the overall body to take a look at that. Today, we're going to give you a little more specific about one of the initiatives that came out of this type of process mapping, and that was taking a look at inter-observer reliability of the modified Finucane used by nurses from all of our units that would be using modified Finucane, and also a regional look at nurses in our region using modified Finucane. Can we go on to the next slide? This being an example of something under evaluation by taking a look at inter-observer reliability. And the origin of this study came from the fact that we kept hearing a common theme by providers that it depended on what shift of nurses and who was doing the Finucane, how reliable it was, or if it could be trusted, or just the state of the infant. So there was an impression that there was variability in scoring without any evidence. So the purpose of the study was to determine if there is inter-observer reliability of the modified Finucane neonatal abstinence scoring tool among nurses caring for infants with neonatal abstinence syndrome in the NICU, in the mother-baby unit, in the PEDS PICU units, and in the regional area of other hospitals that are seeing these infants, and in our home health agency that's following up these infants at Care Partners. Interestingly enough, when I was at the picnic lunch, the kickoff lunch, I overheard two other providers making these same comments, that they really felt that it depended on which nurse called them and reported the Finucane score. So I think there is some real concern about the inter-observer reliability. I'd like to introduce now Kathy Retzkin, who was a co-investigator and actually used this for her DMP project, to present the next series of slides. Kathy?
Hi, Mary Ellen and everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with everybody. I took on this project as part of my DMP project for graduation. And this slide depicts the population of nurses I studied in relation to the three demographic variables of education, years of experience, and certification. There were a total of 122 nurses who participated, and they were from all the units within Mission Hospital, the regional hospitals, and our home health agency. Tammy, next slide. Hello? Oh, there we go. I had corresponded with Karen Diapolito and got permission to use her program in order to investigate the inter-observer reliability. And she was very happy to allow me to use it, and I found it very helpful. And from what I've understand, that's the program that that everybody's been provided at the kickoff meeting. Okay, slide 11. The methods we used, I had presented to the Nursing Research Council, and then we worked on obtaining IRB approval and the Mission Research Institute approval. The participants for this study would come from the nursing staff in the NICU, mother, baby, pediatric and PICU units, and of course, nurses in our regional hospital that took care of NAS babies, and our home health agency was more than willing to participate in the study. The participation in the study was conducted through, I used annual education meetings, staff meetings, I went to Care Partners, we went to regional hospitals, any way we could in order to get nurses to participate in the study or see if they would, because they were all expressing interest in seeing how well they did against each other. The consent to participate was assumed if they participated in the study. It was strictly voluntary. I was able to show a vignette, and the nurses were asked to score using the modified Finucane scoring system. Before they actually saw the vignette, I had them fill out a demographic sheet, which was the information that was obtained in the previous slide. We then made a comparison to the expert score, and I did interclass correlation coefficient for the inter-observer reliability using SPSS. Next slide, please. The interclass correlation coefficient was evaluated using two-way mixed effects, where people effects are random and measure effects are fixed. The value of 0.68 to 0.80 are standards that are used mostly in research as the minimal standard. But if you're using this to evaluate or treat a patient, you really want those scores to be 0.90 or higher. For this particular initiative, the interclass correlation coefficient for the modified Finnegan was 0.996, which showed we did have inter-observer reliability when it came to total score. However, when it came to the single 21 measures that we used, we saw that we really didn't have inter-observer reliability, and the fact that how people obtain their total score varied greatly. Next slide, please. Mary Ellen?
Thank you, Kathy. as Kathy said, that the total score had a high inter-observer reliability. But what we found was in the area of central nervous system, the ICC was at 0.603. Acceptable, but still the one area that showed the greatest variability in inter-observer reliability. Since everyone in this collaborative has received the inter-observer reliability and others may be looking at this, I was curious if we could collaborate and share if we end up all seeing the variability in central nervous system. I think that would be a very interesting finding. You know, where is it that we're seeing the variability, and where do we need to take a look at this score itself or the tool itself versus how we're getting to that score? Tammy, can I go to the next slide? What happened with the study? Oh, Kathy, I guess we were. I'm sorry, you're doing this.
That's okay. After the study was completed, we looked and we saw many opportunities, and one of them was to enhance education on the modified Finnegan scores. So we have now added modified Finnegan scoring to our orientation program for nurses working in the NICU, PEDS, pediatric, mother-baby units, and we're going to use continuing education for existing nurses through our annual skills blitz and just our annual education. We've also going to include our residents so that they better understand how we use modified Finnegan scoring and how to use the scoring tool itself. And in the next phase, we're hoping to share all these results with our providers.
Next slide, Tammy. In this particular year of looking at evaluation, the next step that we're going to take is really taking a look at the standardization of the environment in which the modified Finnegan score is collected. And spend some time in standardizing amongst the units how the state of the baby and the environment in which we create prior to scoring the baby. So the four areas that we're going to concentrate on is the environment quiet, have we minimized noxious lighting, is it after feeding, and is the baby in the mother's arms or being held at the time that the modified Finnegan is being done. These were things that were presented in the Vaughn series and the Vermont-Oxford Network series and have been in the literature mentioned in the literature as an opportunity to standardize the environment before doing the scoring. Even though our total score of the inter-observer reliability was very, very high, We still want to continue to standardize the environment in which the score is being obtained. Tammy, can we have the next slide? So we're going to move forward with some education to standardize creating the environment for modified Finnegan. And we have a number of opportunities to provide that education through our nursing education department, through orientation, through resident education, through our physician service line provider meetings, through quality rounds, through huddles, and through our newsletters. And all of those will be used in order to continue to standardize the inter-observer reliability of the modified Finnegan. Tammy, next slide. So again, this is an example of how we're moving towards standardization for all the units and the providers based on the four areas that we're concentrating on. And again, we've broken up the work into some subcommittees. So in the identification subcommittee, some of the things that have come forward that we want to really take a look at in our plan do review cycles are the use of ICD-9 codes and now ICD-10, and really making sure our providers are choosing the right codes, because we know that we're missing the total number of babies and being able to get the real data that would give us a better picture of what we're looking at. That links to screening in the prenatal period, and so a group is working with the OB providers to take a look at what type of screening is being done universally, when is it being done. And we're launching a qualitative study in the rehabilitation centers with the women to inform us as to what would help them with disclosure, what kind of relationship building should be done as we're asking these questions to promote disclosure during these screening, and what type of screening would help them reveal their use and history of use. What's the scripting that we need to put in place? You probably, and I'll be interested to hear from the group about getting families who are affected by this to participate in these quality initiatives. We've struggled with that, in that people don't want to be associated in a public forum as having this challenge. But they are very willing to share with us individually or using kind of a qualitative collection approach information that helps feed our initiative. So that's how we've approached this, where we've formed focus groups or qualitative collection of information from families. The other thing that we're addressing in our identification subcommittee is toxicology screening. And currently in place, of course, is meconium and urine screening and toxicology of the infants. And when we took a look at a discharge Kaizen that we did on newborns, we found that sometimes discharge was delayed waiting for meconium or waiting to even be able to collect urine, even to send it out. So we're taking a look at switching over to cord toxicology screening, and I'll certainly be interested in others in this collaborative that may have already moved to that. We have discussed it with other centers around the country that have moved to cord toxicology. So that group is really working on those three areas to try to help us identify. The treatment group is broken up into two subcommittees, the pharmacological subcommittee, and that's primarily physician providers or nurse practitioner PA providers that are taking a look at the evidence and the best practices on pharmacological weaning and making sure our weaning protocol is standardized and going out to the region. That work began in 2009. That group is continuing to try to take a look at that standardization and stay on top of it. The non-pharmacological subcommittee is really taking a look at the non-pharmacological interventions that we're doing with infants. and we're a group of nurses and an interdisciplinary team is looking at this and doing some studies on the use of the five S's for swaddling, looking at the use of the Mamaru, and looking at, in the future, taking a look at therapeutic touch and so on. So there's a number of initiatives coming out of the non-pharmacological group. In evaluation, we just really presented the evaluation efforts that are going on. And then a large group is the discharge subcommittee. And taking a look at our discharge guidelines, standardizing the education. One of the things we found was various opportunities for education depending on the unit, that the NICU had more availability of the pharmacists to help with some of the education. We had to bring that forward to the mother-baby unit and to the pediatric unit to make sure. Again, bringing the feedback of our community partners that are out there seeing the babies after they're discharged. And that feedback loop has been so valuable to us to inform us as to what the challenges are once the families get home. The other thing that's happened a number of years ago but continues is our social worker has been involved in the rehabilitation centers in the community, going out and visiting and bringing the women for tours of our units from the rehabilitation center, as well as all the workers at the rehabilitation centers coming and seeing the units and sharing how to do Finnegan, sharing patient education materials, both inpatient and outpatient. So those are the initiatives that are going on in the subcommittees. Let me go on to the next slide. And this is a picture of just a part of our team. This is our Vaughn iNICU team from last year. And if you multiply this times 2 to 3, you'll have an understanding of the number of people involved in the community collaborative. But I love this quote by Margaret Carty that really sums it up for us. The nice thing about teamwork is that you always have others on your side. So it's incredible the amount of passion, commitment that's going on amongst the subcommittees and this full team approach. And you probably will have a similar experience that we did. When you first start looking at this in this process way, not everybody feels involved, and you start to worry about attrition because people feel not part of the team. By breaking up the subcommittees and having everyone really do a deep dive in a particular question or program or goal or plan, it really helped increase involvement and increased us addressing the complexity of this challenge in a more comprehensive way. So that really helped us organize our thinking and get more people involved so that we could take a look at that. And we're now just open for any comments, questions, or anything else that you would like us to discuss.
I have a question. This is Corinne Cochran. I'm a nurse practitioner down here in Pinehurst at Moore Regional Hospital. Actually, I have one question and one comment. In regards to your Finnegan scoring tool, your modified Finnegan scoring tool, excellent work showing the inter-rater reliability. We're actually doing a short PDSA cycle at our hospital as part of this initiative looking at that. Could you comment on the Academy of Pediatrics recommending the Lipsit tool instead of the Finnegan model? Is there potential of that becoming into play in the future and looking at the difference in reliability between the two tools? And secondly, regards to your umbilical cord sampling, I'm glad you brought this issue up. I think meconium is a great matrix for identifying toxicology in our newborns. However, as you know, it takes a long time to get back. And just so you there, Martin and colleagues have looked at a time-of-flight chematography. Versus the gas mass spectrum for the meconium, and they're showing similar sensitivity and specificity between the two. So that reference is actually a pretty good one to look at in terms of the potential of this in the future.
Great. Great. In regards to your first question, yes, I'm familiar with that thoughts through the AAP, and I think that we do need to keep an eye on the other tools. There is something to be said, though, for withdrawal and the difference between when we're giving a medication and seeing a response to it versus withdrawal. And I think that was a question, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was a question in looking at those two tools, which population would that be better served? But absolutely, I think there is quite a bit of opportunity here for all of us to take a look at comparing tools and comparing our reliability within the tools that we choose.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. That was a great presentation, and we look forward to hearing more about what you're accomplishing in the future.
Thank you for inviting us. It's been a real honor.